And I was, well, will we be able to find this out? It's one of Israel's most closely guarded secrets. And yet, Dan and his team were able to do the reporting that got inside of Duv Divan, this elite special forces unit in Israel. It literally means the cherry on top. That's how proud they are of their eliteness. And yet, no matter how elite you are, Israel's way of fighting wars means you kill innocent people. And what comes out in the film from interviews, not just with a soldier, an Israeli soldier who speaks in the film and talks about how, hey, if you see a camera, you take the shot. But also speaking to Chris Van Hollen, United States Senator from Maryland, who's been one of the few Democratic voices critical of Biden in the Senate, who says there's going to be no change in Israel's rules of engagement over the years. And therefore, it was so important on multiple levels to do this film, to identify the shooter, because, of course, as you pointed out in your news headlines, Amy, they just killed 100 Palestinians yesterday. So this is not some old story from history where this happened in 2022 and we're going back to this. Everything that happened since, you could argue, flows from that. The Americans who've been killed, the journalists who've been killed in Gaza, Palestinians, the sense of impunity that Israel has and Israel's soldiers have. There are reports that Israeli soldiers are saying to Palestinians, hey, Trump has our back. Hey, the U.S. government has our back. And it wasn't just Trump. It was Joe Biden, too. And that was why it was so important to make this film, to identify the shooter, to call out Israel's practices when it comes to journalists, and to call out the U.S. role.
I just want to go to Diane. For people who aren't familiar with the progression of what the Biden administration said, the serious cover-up, not only by Israel, but of its main military weapons supplier and supporter of its war on Gaza. And that is Joe Biden. From the beginning, first Israel said it was a Palestinian militant. At that point, what did President Biden say?
So at the very beginning, they said that they wanted the shooter to be prosecuted. They used that word at the State Department and said, this person who killed an American journalist should be prosecuted. But when it started to become clear that it was probably an Israeli soldier, their tone shifted and it became talking about vague calls for accountability or changes to the rules of engagement, which never actually happened. So you got to a point where the Israeli government admitted it was likely them. The U.S. government called for them to change the rules of engagement, and the Israeli government said no. And we have this interview in the film with Senator Chris Van Hollen, who says that essentially Israel was giving the middle finger to the U.S. government on this. And we have seen since that time more Americans being killed in the West Bank, dozens and dozens and dozens of journalists being killed with no accountability. And we would like to see that change. This is a trajectory that you're seeing. You know, the blue vest no longer provides any protection for journalists in Israel. The Israeli military itself has said that wearing a blue vest with press on it does not necessarily mean that you are a journalist. They are saying that terrorists wear blue vests too. So if you are a journalist operating in the West Bank now, you have to assume that the Israeli military could target you.
Well, let's go to another clip from the film Who Killed Shireen, which features Ali Samoudi, Shireen Abu Akleh's producer, who was with Shireen when she was killed and was himself shot and injured. In the clip, he speaks to the journalist Fatma Abdul Karim.
We are set up here now, even though we were supposed to meet at the location where you got injured and Shireen got killed.
We are 5 minutes from the location in Maidan al-Awda, but you could lose your soul in the 5 minutes it would take us to reach it. You could be hit by army bullets. They could arrest you. So it is essentially impossible to get there. I believe the big disaster which prevented the occupation from being punished and repeating these crimes is the neglect and indifference by many of the institutions, especially American ones, which continue to defend the occupation.
We're now approaching the third anniversary of Shireen's death. How did that affect you?
During that period, the occupation was making preparations for a dangerous scenario in the Jenin refugee camp. And for this reason, they didn't want witnesses. They opened fire on us in order to terrorize us enough that we wouldn't go back to the camp. And in that sense, they partially succeeded. Since then, we have been overcome by fear. From the moment Shireen was killed, I said and continued to say and will continue to say that this bullet was meant to prevent the Palestinian media from the documentation and exposure of the occupation's crimes.
That was Ali Samoudi, Shireen Abu Akleh's producer, who was with Shireen when she was killed and was himself shot and injured. We should note Ali Samoudi was just detained by Israeli forces in late April. The Palestinian journalist Mariam Barghouti recently wrote, Ali Samoudi was beaten so bad by Israeli soldiers, he was immediately hospitalized. This man has been one of the few journalists that continues reporting on Israeli military abuses north of the West Bank, despite the continued risk on his life, Mariam Barghouti wrote. The Committee to Protect Journalists spoke to the journalist's son, Mohammed Al-Samoudi, who told CPG, quote, my father suffers from several illnesses, including diabetes, high blood pressure, and a stomach ulcer. He needs a diabetes injection every 2 days and a specific diet. It appears he was subjected to assault and medical neglect at the interrogation center. Our lawyer told us he was transferred to an Israeli hospital after a major setback in his health. We don't know where he is being held, interrogated, or even the hospital to which he was taken. My father has been forcibly disappeared, he said. So, Dion Nissenbaum, if you could give us the latest. You spoke to Ali Samoudi for the documentary, and now he's been detained.
Yeah, his words were prophetic, right? He talks about this was an attempt to silence journalists, and my colleague Fatima says the same thing, that these are ongoing progressive efforts to silence Palestinian journalists. And we don't know where Ali is. He has not actually been charged with anything yet. He is one of the most respected journalists in the West Bank, and we are just seeing this progression going on.
So he, the latest we know is he was supposed to have a hearing, and that hearing has now been delayed to May 13th. Ali Samoudi?
That's right. And he has yet to be charged. So
I want to go back to Linu Abu Akleh, who's in New Jersey, where Shireen grew up. Lena, you were listed on Time Magazine's 100 Emerging Leaders for publicly demanding scrutiny of Israel's treatment of Palestinians. The horror and, our condolences on the death of your aunt, on the killing of your aunt, and also to Anton, Shireen's brother. Lena, you've also, of course, spoken to Ali Samoudi. This continues now. He's in detention. His son says just disappeared. What are you demanding right now? We have a new administration. We've moved from the Biden administration to the Trump administration. And are you in touch with them? Are they speaking to you?
Well, our demands haven't changed. From day one, we're calling for the U.S. administration to complete its investigation, or for the FBI to continue its investigation and to finally release, to finally hold someone to account. And we have enough evidence that could have been, that the administration could have used to expedite this case. But unfortunately, this new administration as well, no one has spoken to us. We haven't been in touch with anyone. And it's just been radio silence since. For us, as I said, our demands have never changed. It's been always to hold the entire system to account, the entire chain of command, the military, for the killing of an American citizen, a journalist, Palestinian-American journalist. As we've been talking, targeting journalists isn't happening just by shooting at them or killing them. There's so many different forms of targeting journalists, especially in Gaza and the West Bank and Jerusalem. So for us, it's really important as a family that we don't see other families experience what we are going through for this, for impunity, for Israel's impunity to end. Because at the end of the day, accountability is the only way to put an end to this impunity.
I am horrified to ask this question to Shireen's family members, to Lena, to Tony, Shireen's brother. But the revelation in the film, we were all there last night at its premiere in New York, that the Israeli soldiers are using a photograph of Shireen's face for target practice. Tony Abu Akla, if you could respond.
You know, there is no words to describe our sorrow and pain hearing this. But, you know, I would just want to know why. Why would they do things? What did Shireen do to them for them to use her as a target practice? You know, this is absolutely barbaric act, unjustified. And we really hope that this U.S. administration will be able to put an end to all this impunity they are enjoying. If they didn't enjoy this all this impunity, they wouldn't have been doing this, practicing on a journalist. Why? You know, you can't practice on anything, but on a journalist. This shows that this targeting of more journalists, whether in Gaza and Palestine, it's systematic. It's been planned for, and they've been targeting and shutting off those voices, those reports, from reaching anywhere in the world.
And Anton, if you could say, you know, you mentioned last night as well, Shireen was in fact extremely cautious as a journalist. If you could elaborate on that, what precisely?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Shireen was very careful. Every time she's in the field, she would take her time to put on the gear, the required helmet, the vest with press written on it, before going there. She also tried to identify herself as a journalist, whether to the Israelis or to the Palestinians, so she's not attacked. And she always went by the book, followed the rules, how to act, how to be careful, how to speak to those people involved, so she can protect herself. But unfortunately, this soldier, as stated in the documentary, targeted Shireen just because she's Shireen and she's a journalist. That's it. There is no other explanation. 16 bullets were fired on Shireen. Not even her helmet nor the vest she was wearing were able to protect her, unfortunately.
Mehdi Hassan, you wanted to respond.
So Tony asks, why? Why would you do this? Why would you target not just a journalist in the field, but then use her face for target practice, as Dion and his team reveal in the film? And there is, unfortunately, a very simple answer to that question, which is that the Israeli military, and not just the Israeli military, but many people in our world today have dehumanized Palestinians. It is the removal of humanity from the people you are oppressing, occupying, subjugating, and killing. It doesn't matter if you're an American citizen. It doesn't matter if you have a press jacket on. It only matters that you are Palestinian in the sniper sights. And that is how they have managed to pull off the killing of so many journalists, so many children. The first documentary we commissioned last year was called Israel's Real Extremism. And it was about the Israeli soldiers who go into Gaza and make TikTok videos wearing Palestinian women's underwear, playing with Palestinian children's toys. It is the ultimate form of dehumanization, the idea that these people don't count, their lives have no value. And what's so tragic and shocking, and the film exposes this, is that Joe Biden, forget the Israeli military, Joe Biden also joined in that dehumanization. Do you remember at the start of this conflict, when he comes out and he says, well, I'm not sure I believe the Palestinian death toll numbers. When he puts out a statement at the 100 days after October 7th and doesn't mention Palestinian casualties. And that has been the fundamental problem. This was the great comforter in chief. Joe Biden was supposed to be the empath. And yet, as Tony points out, what was so shocking in the film is he didn't even raise Shireen's case with Naftali Bennett, the prime minister of Israel at the time. Again, would he have done that if it was an American journalist in Moscow? We know that's not the case. We know when American journalists, especially white American journalists, are taken elsewhere in the world, the government gives a damn. And yet, in the case of Shireen, the only explanation is because she was a Palestinian-American journalist.
You know, in the United States, the U.S. government is responsible for American citizens, which Biden pointed out at the beginning when he thought it was a Palestinian militant, yes, who had killed her. But, Lena, you yourself are a journalist, and I'm thinking, I want to hear your response to using her face, because, of course, that is not just the face of Shireen, but I think it's it's the face of journalism. And it's not just American journalism, of course. I mean, in fact, she's known to hundreds of millions of people around the world as the face and voice of Al Jazeera Arabic. She spoke in Arabic. She was known as that to the rest of the world. But to see that and that revealed in this documentary.
Yeah, it was horrifying, actually, and it just goes on to show how the Israeli military is built. It's barbarism, it's the character of revenge, of hate, and that is part of the entire system. And as Mehdi and as my father just mentioned, this is all about dehumanizing Palestinians, regardless if they're journalists, if they're doctors, they're officials. For them, they simply don't care about Palestinian lives. And for us, Shireen will always be the voice of Palestine. And she continues to be remembered for the legacy that she left behind. And she continues to live through so many journalists who have picked up the microphone, who have picked up the camera just because of Shireen. So regardless of how the Israeli military continues to dehumanize journalists and how the U.S. fails to protect Palestinian-American journalists, we will continue to push forward to continue to highlight the life and the legacy that Shireen left behind.
Well, let's turn to Shireen Abu Akleh in her own words. This is an excerpt from the Al Jazeera English documentary, The Killing of Shireen Abu Akleh.
Sometimes the Israeli army doesn't want you there, so they target you, even if they later say it was an accident. They might say, we saw some young men around you. So they target you on purpose, as a way of scaring you off, because they don't want you there.
So that was Shireen in her own words in an Al Jazeera documentary. So, Lina, I know you have to go soon, but if you could just tell us, what do you want people to know about Shireen as an aunt, a sister, and a journalist?
Yes, so we know Shireen as the journalist, but behind the camera, she was one of the most empathetic people. She was very sincere, and something not a lot of people know, but she was a very funny person. She had a very unique sense of humor that she lit up every room she entered. She cared about everyone and anyone. She enjoyed life. Shireen, at the end of the day, loved life. She had plans, she had dreams that she still wanted to achieve, but her life was cut short by that small bullet which changed our lives entirely. But at the end of the day, Shireen was a professional journalist who always advocated for truth, for justice, and at the end of the day, all she wanted to do was humanize Palestinians and talk about the struggles of living under occupation. But at the same time, she wanted to celebrate their achievements. She shed light on all the happy moments, all the accomplishments of the Palestinian people. And this is something that really touched millions of Palestinians, of Arabs around the world. She was able to enter the hearts of the people through the small camera lens, and until this day, she continues to be remembered for that.
Before we go, we're going to keep you on, Mehdi, to talk about other issues during the Trump administration. But how can people access Who Killed Shireen?
So it's available online at whokilledshireen.com is where you can go to watch it. We are releasing the film right now only to paid subscribers. We hope that change that in the forthcoming days. People often say to me, how could you put it behind a paywall? Journalism, a free press isn't free, sadly. We have to fund films like this. Dion came to us because a lot of other people didn't want to fund a topic like this, didn't want to fund an investigation like this. So we're proud to be able to fund such documentaries, but we also need support from our contributors, our subscribers, and the viewers. But it's an important film, and I hope as many people will watch it as possible. WhoKilledShireen.com.
We want to thank Lina, the niece of Shireen Abu Akleh, and Anton, Tony, the older brother of Shireen Abu Akleh, for joining us, from New Jersey. together, we saw the documentary last night, Who Killed Shireen? And we want to thank Diane Nissenbaum, who is the filmmaker, the correspondent on this film, formerly a correspondent with The Wall Street Journal. The founder of Zatteo on this first anniversary of Zatteo is Mehdi Hassan. We'll continue with him in a moment.
Me gusta la lima, me gusta limón, pero no me gusta tanta corrupción. Me gusta la lima, me gusta limón, pero no me gusta tanta corrupción.
Si fuera presidente, honestamente, si fuera presidente, para mi gente, si fuera presidente, honestamente, presidente.
I burnt tobacco at the opening. Send thanks and prayers to Creator and our living beings. Then I'd sit you down with your abuelita, rewrite history so our kids could see where we came from and a new destiny. From Flint to Cali, water flowing pure and free. My Department of Peace will melt guns into bike racks. Budget cuts to corporate kickbacks. If I was president, well, there'd still be drama. Take some village to heal our generational trauma. So shake your spine, put your hands up high. We got a different kind of party in the White House tonight. If I was president, hey, what would I do? If I was president, hey, I'd ask you if you were president, hey.
If I was president, by Las Cafeteras in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We're continuing our conversation with Mehdi Hassan, who is marking the first anniversary of his new site, Zatteo, which he formed after leaving MSNBC. Mehdi, you've closely covered the war in Gaza as well as the Trump administration. So if you could begin on Gaza.
On where we are right now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of us tried to say that Donald Trump would make things even worse. There was a big debate during the election campaign where people understandably said, it can't get any worse. And the one thing you know about U.S. politics is it can always get worse. And I think we've seen that with the Trump administration. He came in with this great fanfare. He had the fake ceasefire around the time of his inauguration. He got a bit of credit from some folks. We always knew it was never going to last. Netanyahu ended that ceasefire. They're now killing people at rates even worse in many ways than 2024. You guys began the show talking about 100 people killed in 24 hours. And the world is numb to that. You know, in October, November, December of 2023, it was a huge story. And today, people are shrugging their shoulders. We're talking about ethnic cleansing of Gaza, relocating the entire population. The Israeli government said this week that they will flatten everything that remains in Gaza. Netanyahu was quoted in cabinet saying that we don't want to die with the Palestinians. We want them to die alone, was Netanyahu's phrase to his own cabinet ministers. And of course, Donald Trump himself has signed off on all of this. We're now having a mass starvation campaign. During the Biden administration, it was bad enough saying, are we going to get 100 trucks in, 200 trucks in? Zero trucks have gone into Gaza since March the 2nd.
You talk about the personalizing Palestinians. In the United States, where the media manufactures consent, can you talk about the icing out of Palestinian voices? I mean, the fact that you're no longer at MSNBC, that you were forced out of MSNBC after this incredible confrontation you had, questioning you had, interview with an Israeli spokesperson, and your ongoing coverage of bringing those voices out.
So one thing I did at MSNBC, I was at MSNBC for 3.5 years. And one thing, some of my colleagues, we had Ayman Mouyoudin at the premiere of the film last night, who still has a show at MSNBC, although he shares it now with three other hosts. But one thing we did, and one thing Joy Reid, who's also left the network recently, had her show cancelled.
Forced out of the network.
And Ali Velshi, who's still at the network, thankfully, another great correspondent. Something that some of us did was to try and platform Palestinian voices. One of the problems we have, as you say, is they are iced out. Americans don't hear from Palestinians or Arabs or Muslims or people with actual expertise of the region or people who have spent time in Jenin, in the occupied West Bank, in Gaza. And that is a fundamental problem. You are getting a very one-sided view of the conflict. What's ironic, Amy, is the recent Pew poll that came out showed the American public is actually for the first time more sympathetic, less sympathetic to Israel, much more critical. I think it was 52%. I can't remember the exact number, but a majority of Americans were critical of Israel or not supportive of Israel for the first time. And I looked at that number and I thought, wow, a majority of Americans, a slim majority, that's despite the media coverage in favor of Israel. Imagine if Americans actually got fair coverage of this conflict and actually heard from Palestinians. Those numbers would be even higher. And I think the real tragedy is that the media has been complicit in the Gaza genocide. I'll give you one example. Over the last few weeks, Palestinians have been starved in Gaza by the Israelis. And according to one study, not a single Sunday show in this country has mentioned it.
Mehdi, I just want to ask you what we reported also in headlines, the Reuters exclusive, U.S.-Israel discuss possible U.S.-led administration for Gaza. Sources say they spoke to five people who corroborated reports that the U.S. and Israel are discussing the U.S. potentially leading a temporary post-war administration of Gaza. Your response.
Kill me now is my response. Kill me now. Or do we live in an episode of Idiocracy? The American government sat around, forget Donald Trump, man's an idiot, ignoramus, couldn't find Gaza on a map. But people in his administration, qualified people, sat around the table and said, what should we do about Gaza, the biggest problem in the world today, geopolitical issue? Let's do what we did in Iraq. Right. The Iraq, for those people who are watching who are not old enough to remember 2003, 4, 5, I've interviewed Paul Bremer. The Bush administration sent a viceroy, sent Paul Bremer to run the country with a bunch of kids. Some of them were out, some of them had only, there was one guy who went out to the Greens that I famously remember who had only run an ice cream truck in college. They sent a bunch of children and Paul Bremer to run Iraq like a colonial project. It was an absolute disaster. It increased sectarian tensions. It increased violence. It divided the country. It fomented more violent resistance. The idea that the people of Gaza, who have resisted Israeli occupation for decades, and now going to say, well, we only had an issue with Israeli occupation. We're fine with a U.S. occupation. This is absurd. Some of us warned since October the 7th that if you really care about stopping Hamas, why are you creating the conditions for Hamas 2.0? And this is going to be Hamas 3.0, Hamas on steroids, if you create a situation where the American government, American military is on the ground in Gaza trying to control the population.
I mean, don't we have an idea? What did Trump tweet out that the video, the 30-second yes. video of
with a gold statue
Elon
of Trump
Musk, and a gold statue of Trump, and then Trump and Netanyahu on the beach.
He loves his AI videos of himself. It's an insane video. We all just moved on for it because there's so much happening in the news, but I'm glad you reminded that. Look, he's been consistently clear on one thing. Ethnic cleansing, relocation of Palestinians, creating Gaza the Riviera. He's obsessed with the beachfront property because he's a real estate guy / war criminal endorser.
A federal appeals court on Wednesday ordered the Trump administration to transfer the abducted Tufts Fulbright Scholar international student Rumeysa Ozturk yes. from Louisiana back to Vermont, where her case could be heard. You just interviewed the Massachusetts yes. Congresswoman Brianna Presley about her treatment.
Horrific treatment. We're not just detaining foreign students in this country for speech crimes, Amy. We're torturing them, too. If you listen to what happened to Badr Khan Suri, who's a Georgetown student who was also detained, the torture that he's gone through, the abuse, the sleeping on the floor, the denial of clean underwear, and now Rumeysa Ozturk, Ayanna Pressley, congresswoman, told me that when she went to see her, she was denied health care. She suffered severe asthma attacks. She had her hijab removed without consent. I mean, we are Louisiana. That detention center in Louisiana is famous for human rights crimes. So why are people being sent from Vermont and Massachusetts and New York, Mahmoud Khalil, to Louisiana? That in itself is a question we should ask ourselves. We're torturing people again.
So, Mehdi, in that same interview, Ayanna Pressley said to you, this is not about the Trump administration. This is not about weathering the next 4 years. I believe this will dictate the next 100. We have 30 seconds. Your response to that?
I think she's right in many ways. I think we are in that historical period. Now, this is not just about Trump. You look at the global rise of fascism and authoritarianism. You look at what's happening with Narendra Modi in India and Orban in Hungary, Putin in Russia and Ukraine, Middle East autocrats. We are in that place where a democracy, the progress we made over the last 80 years, 100 years, is at stake, very much so.
Can a judge just stop immigrants from being sent to Libya on a U.S. military jet? And over 80 students were just arrested at Columbia. And Rubio said he'd pull international visas of students who are protesting. Your final thoughts in 5 seconds.
Fascism isn't coming, Amy. It's here.
Mehdi Hassan, the editor-in-chief of the media website Zatteo, which is celebrating its one-year anniversary this week. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
Every time time you tune in to CJSF, you make a choice to step outside of the box of what's normal and support an alternative. Alternatives are critical for making change, which we need so, so badly. I'm Leslie, host of Typically Tuesdays, on Mondays at 3 p.m. And I see you contributing to social change in your small and profound ways simply by tuning into us. Thanks for being on our team.